Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Honorable Justices, ladies and gentlemen of the academia, dear colleagues, I excuse my appearance, but we Northern Europeans are not made for these temperatures. It's a very great pleasure to be here today. Thank you very much for the invitation. And having been a legal advisor in the German Foreign Office, it's great to be among lawyers again for a change. In that capacity, I had the honor to co-found in 2014-15 the International Nuremberg Principles Academy in Nuremberg, which I hear is co-financing the seminar. So it's very nice to hear that this academy is doing something sensible without my doing. Why is the subject of today's seminar so important? For any person unfamiliar with public international law, the answer is not at all obvious. Let me try and answer without taking too much time. The history of mankind has been riddled with wars. War still is ubiquitous. War has always been viewed as a transgression of the natural order. As the Greek historian Herodotus put it thus, back in the 5th century BC, and I quote, "In peace, sons bury fathers, but war violates the order of nature, and fathers bury sons." This fundamental insight has been the driving force to moderate war through the law, to regulate when and how it is waged. These are the two strands, when and how, the jus ad bellum and the jus in bello. Now, the earliest efforts from antiquity onward sought to regulate the actions that lead to war through the rules of jus ad bellum. I was really fascinated to hear from Justice Lokur about the Mahabharata, because I was totally unaware that the Mahabharata had already laws and ideas on the jus ad bellum and jus in bello. So in the Western world, the philosopher Cicero, who wrote in De Republica, I quote, "Unjust wars are those that are waged without cause. For except to take revenge or to expel enemy forces, no just war can be waged." We all know that the efforts to develop a restrictive jus ad bellum over the course of the time has been rather limited. When World War I broke out, the sad fact is that waging war was considered a natural right of sovereign states, something their political leaders could resort to at their discretion. In fact, it took two world wars before the comprehensive prohibition of the use of force finally became a peremptory norm of international law enshrined in Article 2, Paragraph 4 of the UN Charter. Now, this is the one strand, jus ad bellum. In parallel ran the second strand, the efforts to tame the violence of war through the terms of jus in bello. However, although there are early bits and pieces of jus in bello, also in the Western world, we know that it only gained traction in the late 19th century with the development of modern mass warfare and the placing of greater emphasis on the individual. Finally, after World War II, there came a paradigm shift. I cannot overemphasize that it was a paradigm shift. The development of international criminal law in Nuremberg shifted the focus away from the state acts and onto personal criminal responsibility, so that from now on, all perpetrators of international crimes have to be aware that they could also be held personally accountable for their crimes by the courts. If not immediately, then later. As, for example, the ICTY, the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, has shown, in the end, everybody for whom this tribunal had issued an arrest warrant was brought before the court. So my answer to the question why the subject of today is so important is, international criminal law is at the pinnacle of almost 2,000 years of legal development. It is definitely worth studying and especially defending this human achievement. So why did we, the German Foreign Office, together with the state of Bavaria and the town of Nuremberg, found the International Nuremberg Principles Academy? Because the Nuremberg judgments, and in particular the Nuremberg principles, are absolutely revolutionary for three reasons. First, they have normative significance. In the past, international law was on the whole a toothless beast, with financial compensation the only sanction of any great import at its disposal. For the first time in the history of man, leading state representatives were held to account for their crimes in accordance with rule of law principles. This was a decisive step away from the sole responsibility of states towards the co-responsibility of individuals for the most serious crimes against international law. New concepts, such as the crimes against peace and crimes against humanity, were introduced to supplement those war crimes which were already accepted, i.e. violations of the rules on the conduct of war. The second reason, the Nuremberg judgments have institutional significance. The creation of the International Military Tribunal as an international criminal court set a precedent. It was the first time such a court had ever been established. In many respects, it's provided the blueprint for later international criminal courts, such as the ICTY and the Court for Rwanda, and ultimately also the International Criminal Court. And the third reason, the judgments have a moral and ethical significance. Nuremberg changed social mores and had an enduring impact on the way we think. Those trials were about far more than prosecuting the worst Nazi crimes. In 1945, the victorious Allies also explicitly wanted the Nuremberg trials to help establish a new peaceful world order, an international order based on law. I want to stop here and not go into the making of the ICC, nor into today's challenges for international criminal law. I only want to invite you to go to Nuremberg and visit the Academy. It actually has the original courtroom 600 of the Nuremberg trials as its seat. So it's really the birthplace of modern international criminal law and worth visiting. And I only want to stress how important it is to defend the achievement of modern international criminal law. It has become one cornerstone of a rules-based international order, and both India and Germany stand for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.